This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Elmore Leonard is on a winning streak. The recent movies Get Shorty, Jackie Brown, and Out of Sight were adapted from his novels and won him new audiences, although he was already no stranger to the bestseller list. His new book is a sequel to Get Shorty, so let's start there. The film adaptation of Get Shorty starred John Travolta as Chili Palmer, a loan shark sent to Los Angeles to collect a gambling debt from Harry Zim, a B-movie producer played by Gene Hackman. Palmer follows Zim and breaks into the home of the producer's girlfriend, Karen Flores, played by Renee Russo. In this scene, Palmer tries to muscle the money from Zim.
Now, Harry, a marker is like a check.
I know what a marker is.
They don't want to deposit yours and have a bounce. That annoys them. And your dear friend, Dick Allen's been calling you, leaving messages on your machine, and you haven't gotten back to him. So he asked me as a favor to look you up. So I follow you here. And I see you in a window with a woman. Looks a lot like Karen Flores, the actress from Grotesque. You're not looking at me, Harry.
Why do I have to keep looking at you?
Because I want you to.
So now you're gonna get rough, huh? I make good by tomorrow, you're gonna break my legs.
Come on, Harry, maces.
You tell Dick Allen I'll cover those markers in the next 60 days at the most. If he doesn't like it, then that's his problem. So, you want me to call you a cab?
So you make movies, huh?
I produce feature motion pictures. No TV. You mentioned Grotesque before. That happens to be Grotesque Part 2 that Karen Flores was in. She also starred in 3 of my slime creatures releases. You may have seen them.
I got an idea for a movie.
When Chili Palmer returns in Leonard's new novel, Be Cool, he has 2 films under his belt, the hit Get Leo and the flop Get Lost. Now he's ready to make his 3rd movie about a rock singer who wants to be a star. One of the things that you're famous for as a writer, and this is the thing I think that makes your novels so great to adapt into screenplays, is your dialogue. It's lively, it's colorful, it's funny, and it reveals a lot about the people who are speaking it. There's a paragraph I'm going to read. It's a small thing I want to point out here, but I just really like it a lot. Let me get to the page. Okay, this is a scene in which a few of the characters are driving to a club that has swing bands performing. And I'll just pick it up here. Elliot said, guys went in there to shoot pool, and at night they had swing bands performed. One of them, Johnny Crawford, the kid that used to be on The Rifleman on TV, Chuck Connors' kid. Elliot hadn't seen the series. It was before his time, but he knew about it. Raji couldn't remember if he'd seen it or not when it was on, but he said, yeah, The Rifleman. It wasn't bad for what it was. You know what I'm saying? And I love that, the guy who can't remember it all.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, it wasn't bad for what it was. You know what I'm saying? There's something so perfect about that. It's kind of like fooling himself and fooling the other people.
Yeah, Raji probably believes what he said. Yeah, he's loaded with confidence. Which is just, baloney. He's a street talker.
And I love the way you added the, you know what I'm saying, because to be speaking about something you know nothing about, and then ask for, that's true, isn't it? From somebody else, it's great.
Because I know that I'm going to move my stories with as much dialogue as possible, and this goes way back. I've always paid attention to dialogue. I've always listened. I've always made sure that each character has a different sound, an identifiable sound.
I think it's really good the way you capture somebody faking it in their dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Now, I try not to use any adverbs to let you know exactly how they're saying it, because mm-hmm. I feel, well, if I've presented the character properly, you know what he sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you know when he's being truthful, and you know when he's being sarcastic, and you know when he's honest. So I rely on my development of the character to keep me from using adverbs.
Now, you have pages that are just dialogue. There's really no exposition outside of the dialogue. And I think when you write a lot of dialogue, you get into a lot of substitutions for he said and she said. He retorted, she opined, he rebuked her. I think you try to stay away from that.
Far away.
Yeah, and sometimes...
I use only said.
You use only said, and sometimes there isn't even an annotation of who's speaking. And so you really have to keep track, because there's a new paragraph, but it doesn't say who the speaker was each time somebody speaks. And tell me why you do that, why you don't always say who is speaking.
Well, more often than not, the he said is put in for a pause, a beat, rather than for identification.
Mm-hmm.
Because if just two people are speaking, they're alternating, the lines alternate, you know, this guy and then this guy. When you have three people talking, it becomes very difficult. Just one more character, and it compounds the problem of identification. And then you have many more he saids, she saids in it. I learned something from Raymond Carver about he said, using the verb said, and very very often he Carver would use within a paragraph said two or even three times. And you know it's not for identification. It's continuing. The dialogue is continuing, but it's in there for a beat, beats, so you'll just pause a moment before the next. A bigger beat than a period, you know.
Now, you don't have to worry about the he said type of thing if you're writing a screenplay. It's just the person speaking, a colon,
yeah.
And then the dialogue they speak.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you like
that's
that?
That's right. Well, I don't like writing screenplays, so I stopped doing it. I had to write screenplays, but selling my material to having it optioned and bought in Hollywood and then writing screenplays supported my book writing for 15 to 20 years. But finally I got to the point where I didn't have to write screenplays, so I didn't have to listen to all the various ideas that came off the tops of heads at story conferences, and I could just go home then, I mean sit home then and write my book without anyone telling me what to do, and knowing that it's going to sell, I mean knowing at least that the publisher's going to buy it, and knowing that my editor likes what I do, and knowing that I get more satisfaction out of writing a book than I ever will a screenplay, that was a simple decision to make.
If there weren't people telling you what to do in the movie world, and if you had complete independence, would you want to write more screenplays? And I ask that because in some ways you seem perfect for the part, since screenplays are dialogue, and that's something you're so good at.
I know, but it's deceiving, because when you take my manuscript, 350-page manuscript, and you bring it down to 120-page shooting script, an awful lot of the good stuff's gone. You come down to plot. And this is what interests Hollywood, plot. And plot, to me, is not what makes my book move. It's the characters. The characters are the most important element, how they interact, who they are, what they think, even little set pieces, things that are part of their backstories. Those are all much more interesting to me than what's going to happen, although I know by now how to write it in such a way that you leave off before something happens and you go to another scene. In a way, it's kind of a movie in a movie format. You know, that you end with a question. You don't really know what's what happens is not the most important thing about the book. It's how they get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ride. It's the ride, not finally where you arrive at.
In your three recent movies, Get Shorty, Jackie Brown, and Out of Sight, did you work on the screenplays at all?
No, I didn't. I did Scott Frank, who's up for an award for Out of Sight, an Oscar. He and I disagreed on certain things, because he would call me while we became friends when he was doing, when they were shooting Get Shorty.
I'll just say he wrote the screen adaptation of Out of Sight.
Mm-hmm. And And because we were friends now, then he would call me up when he was writing out of sight and tell me where he was having problems or just in general what he was doing. And a couple of places we disagreed. Albert Brooks character, for example, in the movie, he wanted to bring in and do scenes with him, whereas in the book he's only in a backstory. He's only told about. And I said, I don't think that it's necessary to bring the character in. The fact that there's a lot of money at his house, that is the pie in the sky for the characters who want to go and steal it. And that's all really you need. And I didn't agree with his idea for the ending, because I said it's the woman's, it's the federal marshal, it's her story, not his. And I think you should end with her and her attitude about the affair she had with him. And Scott Frank said, yeah, well, it's her book, but it's his movie, because he's George Clooney, and he's going to sell more tickets than Jennifer Lopez. But neither one of them sold that many tickets. But and he was right. He was right about the ending, and he was right about Albert Brooks' presence in the movie. And I think it worked, and I told him.
My guest is Elmore Leonard. His new novel, Be Cool, is a sequel to Get Shorty. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Elmore Leonard. His new novel, Be Cool, is a sequel to Get Shorty. Now, let me ask you about the screen adaptation of Rum Punch, which was Quentin Tarantino's movie, Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
This is one of those rare times in movie history when the novel has a pretty happy ending, where the man and the woman get together. And in Jackie Brown, the movie adaptation, they don't get together.
Well, I'm not sure that in the book that they get together. I think there's a possibility, but it's still up in the air. Is he going to go with her or not? She's got all the money in the car, and is he going to go with her? I don't think it's that clear in the book, because I wasn't sure myself.
You're the guy who knows, so I defer to you on this one.
I remember when my editor at Delacorte read the manuscript, and she said, you know, it ends awfully abruptly. I said, I know it does, but it's over. And she said, why don't you just let it coast a little bit, just a page or so, but without adding any new material, which I did. So then I took the two pages, the final two pages, and rewrote them as three pages, and just kind of, I don't know exactly what I did, but it didn't have the same, it still has kind of an abrupt feeling, but it wasn't as abrupt as the original manuscript. In the screen version now, which I think is the most closely adapted of any of mine that have been made into movies, that Quentin's screenplay expanded a little bit on scenes. He took his time with it. He told me this is what he was going to do, that the first half of the picture is getting to know the characters, and then finally we will get him into action. And I resented the fact that some of the critics said, well, it's too long. Well, too long, it wasn't too long for Quentin, and he's the one who's making the picture. This is his movie, you know? It's like a painting. It's like looking at a painting on a wall. It's, oh, well, it's too wide. You ought to cut about 2 feet off the right-hand side. You know, this is the artist's, this is his baby. This is what he did, what he's proud of. And I thought the movie was great. I loved it.
I loved it, too. One of the really nice things about the movie is, you know, the two romantic leads in it are Robert Forster and Pam Grier. And, you know, they're both, you know, middle-aged. They'd be over the hill by Hollywood standards, right?
Yeah.
And there's something just, like, so touching about the relationship of these two really hard-boiled people with each other.
Well, that was the idea, that it is a romance. he called me 2 years before he started. He was going to do a book of mine called Kill Shot, but then he decided, he called me up and said, I've decided to do Rum Punch because it's the best woman's part I've seen in a long time. And he had already thought of Robert Forster for the bail bondsman. Didn't mention Pam Grier. And so he must have had her in mind, but he didn't want to spring that on me, I don't think, yet. Because then, just before he went into production, he called me up and said, I've been afraid to call you for the last year. And I said, why? Because you're changing the title and you're making the lead a black woman? And he said, yeah. I said, well, I like Pam Grier and I like your movies, so go ahead, do whatever you want. You know, it's in your hands. I'm not going to make any suggestions.
Is there a scene in any of the recent film adaptations of your novels where you particularly like hearing the actor doing lines that are straight out of your book?
Yeah, in Jackie Brown, when Sam Jackson was trying to get, I forgot who it was, to get into the trunk of the car. And Quentin liked that so much he even elaborated on it. The scene is longer in the movie than it is in the book. It's usually the other way around. I thought that worked extremely well.
What did you like about it?
Well, just the way they were. I just felt that these two guys were really into it. I mean, they were really doing it. They were really those characters. It was so believable to me.
And how much of that was improvised? How much of it came right out of the book?
Well, I was on the set when they were shooting that scene, and they started to improvise, and Quentin said, "No, stay with the lines as they're written. You can improvise later," and he made sure that the characters stayed with his dialogue. Then he would let them try things. And it was the same way with Barry Sonnenfeld in Get Shorty. The actors had to stay with the words as written. Because what happens is when actors begin to make up their own lines, they're usually lines that you thought of and discarded as being trite or too obvious. And it's funny, in story meetings, the studio executive will come up with this, what he thinks is a great idea, and he doesn't realize that in writing a book over a period of 6 or 7 months, that you've thought of all these ideas, and you discarded them, and you've come up with what you believe is the best idea to make the story work, you know?
I'm going to play some of that scene with Samuel Jackson getting Chris Tucker into the trunk from Jackie Brown. The language is filled with expletives, which we're going to have to bleep out. How come you use so many expletives in your dialogue?
Because that's the way those people talk. I remember my mother saying, oh, that's terrible. I said, Mother, I don't talk like that, but they do. What am I going to do? I mean, it's a fact, but I think it really does spark it up, though. There's no question about it. It's not descriptive at all. You know, it's just they're sounds, but they're emphatic sounds.
Here's Samuel Jackson getting Chris Tucker into the trunk with lots of expletives from Jackie Brown. Elmore Leonard, thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Man, you must be out of your f***ing mind if you think I'm going to get in this dirty-ass trunk.
We ain't going nowhere but to Koreatown, man. You ain't going to be in here no more than 10 minutes.
Man, I ain't riding in no trunk for no minute, man. Well, I can't ride up front with you.
You can't ride up front with me. The surprise element is 90% of it.
I'm sorry, man, but I ain't getting no trunk.
I can't believe you do me like this.
Do you like what, man? I just ain't climbing in no...
Elmore Leonard's new novel is called Be Cool. Screenwriter Scott Frank has received an Academy Award nomination for his adaptation of Leonard's novel Out of Sight. Here's George Clooney in a scene from the film.
How can I help you, sir?
See, the man talking to your bank manager has his case open.
Oh, that's Mr. Gwendon, one of our assistant managers. Our manager is Mr. Schoen, but he's not in today.
But you see the man with the briefcase?
Yes.
That's my partner. He has a gun in there. If you don't do exactly what I tell you, or if you give me any kind of a problem at all, I'm going to look over at my partner, and he's going to shoot your Mr. Gwendon between the eyes. All right, now take one of those big envelopes and put as many hundreds, 50s, and 20s as you can pack into it. Nothing with bank straps or rubber bands. I don't want any dive packs. I don't want any bait money. Start with the second drawer and then the one over there underneath the money counter. This is your first time being around? You're doing great. Just smile, Loretta, so you don't look like you're being held up. I haven't had to give my partner a sign. Well, that's good. Now he's going to wait 30 seconds until I'm out of the building. Make sure you haven't set off the alarm. If you have, he's going to shoot you, Mr. Gwendon, between the eyes. Okay? I think that'll do it, Loretta. Thank you. Nice day.
You too.
It's your thing. Do what you want to do. I can't tell you who to sock it to.
This is Fresh Air.